Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast for the week of April 2nd, 2007. This is episode 77. Hello from wherever you are, this is Norm the Intern hosting this week's PC Gamer Podcast. Joining me this week is Kristen Salvatore.
Hello.
Logan Decker.
Not as garlicky as I was last week.
That's up for debate.
Gary Witta.
Hi.
And from Chicago, Jeremy Williams.
Greetings and salutations.
So to start off the first podcast of April, we have this story. Apparently there's a new Company of Heroes game coming out. That was just announced today. Company of Heroes Opposing Fronts is the new game. It's not going to be an expansion pack. It's going to be a standalone sequel. Though, what do we think about it? Logan, what do you think about it?
I think it's fantastic that it came out so soon after the last one. I assumed it was an expansion pack. That it is not is even better. You know, it says they're getting ambitious. Rather than just, you know, keep squeezing out a few extra levels every now and then to bring out some extra bucks, you know, they went the whole, you know, nine yards. I like it. I'm happy.
Well, from the official news post, I guess, and on the Relic news forums, one of the members outlined what new information will be, or what new features we'll be seeing in this standalone expansion. There will be two new campaigns. One will be from the British side, and one will be from the German side. And I guess we'll also see some Canadian units.
I guess that's why they call it opposing fronts.
Well, on the British side, they outline three new units, and same for the German side. The thing with the original Company of Heroes, there was only one campaign, the Allied campaign, and even though there were two sides that you could play in multiplayer, there was no Axis campaign. So I guess hopefully they'll have a tutorial and a full campaign for both the British and the German side. I'm a little surprised, too, that this is coming out so soon after Company of Heroes. It does kind of feel like an expansion pack from what they're detailing. But
it's standalone, right?
But it's standalone, which I guess is almost a little marketing thing where, you know, you don't need the original game and we're going to call it a quote-unquote sequel, but it's basically the content that you would find in an expansion pack.
Are they saying how much it is?
They didn't announce that. No, not yet.
I mean, I imagine it will be less expensive than the first game, don't you think?
Yeah, and I wonder if it'll include the first game, because sometimes standalone expansion packs actually do that, too. If it did, that'd be a great value.
Sure.
That'd be a huge value.
Would that make it a standalone, though?
Yeah, that's actually what I was kind of wondering. Like, isn't it just, yeah.
Well, I guess they're just billing it as a full-blown sequel. I mean, they did the same thing with, what was the other World War II game? Brothers in Arms, right? Where shortly after the first game came out, they had a quote-unquote sequel, but it was just the same engine.
Weren't there like three of those released in 1 year, or in like a year and a half period?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It was almost episodic.
Right.
But they didn't build it as that. So Company of Heroes Opposing Fronts probably coming out later this year. We're excited. It was our game of the year last year, and we can't wait to get more World War II RTS time in. Moving on, the next news story we have is Quake Wars, which is probably one of the most anticipated shooters, I mean, I guess second to Crysis, if we're all still excited about Crysis. Quake Wars, which is coming out on both PC and 360, won't support live anywhere.
But never the twain shall meet.
Yeah, so, we'll as PC gamers, we'll never be able to play with 360 gamers.
Did they give a reason for that? Because that seems like it would have been a no-brainer.
Right.
I think they did. One of the id guys in the article I read said that they did a cost-benefit analysis, and to adopt their networking code to the Live Anywhere system, it would just be too much work for not enough payoff.
Well, isn't this when Microsoft should have stepped in and said, hey, you know, we're trying to promote the service?
Exactly. I mean, I can't imagine that Microsoft didn't come in and said, here's a buttload of cash, and why don't you do that so people will try Live Anywhere, but I guess they didn't.
Don't you think it's a balancing issue, though? Because as much as you guys say that Shadowrun is well-balanced between 360 and PC, I'd have a hard time believing anything Quake-related would work console versus PC.
And Shadowrun was also built from the ground up, I'm assuming. Or I know for sure, to do that, so...
This strikes me as kind of an early condemnation of this system, that, you know, you've got a game like Quake Wars, which is so highly anticipated and really strikes me as something that Microsoft should be pushing as kind of a flagship exercise for this Live Anywhere, and instead you've got the developers saying that it's not worth the effort.
It does sort of give us a little bit, you know, we've brought up a number of times our curiosity about exactly what the nature of the relationship is between Microsoft and the different developers with regard to games for Windows and with regard to Live Anywhere. This seems to sort of answer that question. You know, that they don't really have maybe the sway that we thought they did. Or maybe
We were hoping to see a lot more aggressiveness on Microsoft's part. A lot more. You know, like Gary said, this should have been a no-brainer.
But I guess also, if they were to adopt it, they would have to also incorporate other features of Games for Windows Live, like the achievements and whatever.
Yeah,
but
that's all the stuff that we're supposed to be getting excited about. So if third-party developers are saying, we can't be bothered, then I think that's a bad sign.
Yeah. Well, I guess it would also delay the game a lot more than it already has been delayed. I mean, Quake Wars has been in development for a number of years already. And this late in development, especially when it's supposed to come out relatively soon, this summer, you know, they don't want to have to attach. Maybe in a patch. Maybe they will support it later on. But I don't think it's necessarily a balancing thing because it is being simultaneously developed for the 360. It's going to come out on 360 anyway, I think, right?
I actually would kind of like to see Microsoft be more... more, like you said, more aggressive with these Games for Windows requirements. That, you know, if it's a achievements should be something that is mandated.
Yeah.
And if you've got 360 and PC versions of a game, and it's technically and creatively appropriate for those games to be made available for Live Anywhere, then they should have to do it.
But obviously, for whatever the nature of the relationship between Microsoft and the developers, I'm assuming obviously because this is happening, that's not, I guess, within the scope of what Microsoft can do. They can't force them to do it.
See, this is one of the strengths that you do have on kind of a closed platform where, you know, Microsoft say if you want to publish something on Xbox 360, you've got to play by our rules. And here's our very long list of rules and requirements. And that's how you make sure that achievements and Xbox Live functionality, and, you know, there's a certain kind of assurance, you know, a basic level of service that you're going to get with every Xbox game. Because the PC is an open platform, obviously that's great for all kinds of reasons. But now we're seeing kind of the other side where Microsoft can't enforce those standards across the board maybe the way that they would like to.
Well, they're not even doing it with Halo 2, are they? And that's their own game.
Yeah, they're not. Halo 2 for Vista will be only on... for multiplayer, it will be PC versus PC.
It's Live Anywhere enabled. It's just not cross-platform play enabled. Right. But their reason they said for doing that was, you know, basically in order to do that, you would have had to make Halo a 360 game, and it's not. It was an original
Halo 2
Xbox
was a,
game.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Which I think a lot of people will forget.
I see.
Yeah. Well, I'm here to tell you.
But something interesting is also in the article. They say that the compatibility issues between PC and PS3, however, aren't as convoluted and complicated. So adapting PC games to have cross-platform gaming there would actually be a lot easier.
Wouldn't it just be hee-haw hilarious if that's what turned out, if that's what ended up happening, if we saw more PC to PS3 play before we saw more PC to Xbox 360 play?
Yeah.
Gary, you have a PS3, right?
Yes.
What do you play on it?
Blu-ray movies.
Well, let's move on into Kristen's favorite topic, Second Life.
It's not that it's my favorite topic. I just find it fascinating. But for some reason, my fascination with Second Life just really rubs Greg the wrong way. Like, it just ticks him off. But,
well,
you know, we fear what we do not understand. You hear him screaming back there? Here? You see what it's like for me here?
He feels that he understands it all too well.
Well, frankly, I don't understand it either. I don't know if anybody really understands it. I mean,
it's a work in progress. I guess that's what it is.
I just think it's interesting.
It's the Matrix. The Reuters article released yesterday says that now the FBI is checking into gambling internet casinos in Second Life and checking on whether they should, the U.S. government should have any regulation in that.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, and it's not Second Life, but, you know, that just happens to be what the news story is about, but there have been lots of different news stories lately about whether or not the IRS is going to be, you know, taxing, you know, money you make off, you know, taxing in-game economies. I mean, I think this is just another example of how the government all of a sudden is taking a closer look at exactly what's going on.
Well, they want their cuts.
Exactly.
Well, now, wait a minute. What is the FBI doing in Second Life?
Well,
I mean, did somebody call in a tip?
They were invited, we should say. Linden Labs actually invited them in to take a look at what was going on.
Really?
How would they have known if they were there or not? What are they walking around with, like, FBI on their...
Yeah, like, they have their own avatars, you know, for sunglasses.
Like, look, the FBI's here.
Can I just say that Second Life... I think I'm right in saying this, but it must surely hold the record, the statistic for being the game that is talked about the most on the PC Gamer podcast and played the least, by people on the podcast.
You're dead right.
Like, it's a great thing to actually talk about, but no one actually, you know, it's not something that anybody actually wants to do.
Because every time we actually try to go in and, like, investigate what's going on in Second Life, it's like wandering through a ghost town. It just seems like there's never anybody there.
Hey, I watched Chuck play it for a few minutes.
Yeah, when we heard that Wired had to open an office in Second Life, we were all like, ooh, let's go to the Wired offices in Second Life. But, you know, guess what? It's just a bunch of, like... You know, it's just like a virtual box with, like, nothing in it.
I was hoping to at least see a cigarette butt on the floor or something.
Yeah, so you walk in and you're like, well, now we're in Wired's offices in Second Life. Like, there's, you know, it just sort of seems like, it seemed to us like there was nothing happening. But maybe we just aren't dialed in enough. The other story, actually, that we had on, you know, that we had on our list today about Second Life has to do with the naming in Second Life.
Oh, yeah, they're going to start charging now.
Because you haven't been able to choose your own name exactly, I guess. You could use your own whatever first name you wanted, but there was this rotating stock of surnames. Did you see what the list of the rotating stock of surnames was?
No.
It's bizarre. They range from such conventional surnames as Geiger to odd or futuristic ones like Pugilist.
Stenbog.
Stenbog. That's like an IKEA bookcase.
Yeah. But can you choose your kid for a little extra money? Can you get your own title, like Prince or Duchess?
I don't know. Well, now it looks like you'll be able to do whatever you want. Like, John Edwards has apparently his own. Who knew? John Edwards hanging out in Second Life.
Well, that's the new hip thing for politicians these days, right? They have to have some kind of online presence, and that has to be in Second Life, whether it's like an office there or some stage to make announcements, even though the number of people that attend or but somehow, you know, Yahoo will pick up on that story, and, you know, thousands of people will read that news story.
You know, Gary, to your point, I wonder if, in fact, nobody's in Second Life. They're all just talking about being in Second Life and what's going on in Second Life, but no one's actually in Second Life. You know what I mean? Like, Reuters is always running stories about, like, we've opened an office in Second Life, but, like...
The hype has, I think, is massively exaggerated over the reality of what, you know, how many people are playing it and how exciting it is. It's just something that people seem to like writing about. It makes good copy, but, you know, I've never even come close to wanting to play, and I don't know, what's the combined number of hours, you know, with everyone on this podcast actually in Second Life?
You know, maybe 0.25.
I watched somebody else play for 45 seconds.
You know, that probably puts you ahead of most people sitting in
the... It was John Edwards flanked by Secret Service in Second Life. That would be cool.
Mm. Yeah, and they have, like, wings, and they... Yeah. I mean, the one thing, the only thing that I've... Or I should say the thing that I think is most interesting and, frankly, funniest that I've read about in Second Life are these, like, random roving sort of, like, terrorist groups that attack...
Yeah, that's the
Reefers.
Yeah, but the way that they... there's, I guess, this one group that actually is sort of attacking Linden Labs, who run Second Life, because they want Linden Labs to go public and, like, let everybody who plays have, you know, stock in the
S-L-L-A.
Company and control. It's, yeah.
Second Life Liberation Army.
And then there are these, like, roving bands of griefers, but the way that they attack people are bizarre. They, like, pelt them with a bunch of virtual penises. Like, stuff like that. It's weird.
What would you do?
If pelted with a virtual penis?
No,
or if
instead,
I was trying to attack
pelting,
somebody in Second Life.
If you were trying to attack somebody in Second Life instead of pelting with virtual penises.
With a virtual penis? I don't know. I'm not much of a griefer. I'm not much of a griefer.
So it turns out Richard Garriott, the Lord British, the creator of the Ultimate Computer Games, is planning on taking a zero-G flight that goes up to like 25,000 miles up into the atmosphere this month with...
The Vomit Comet.
Yeah, that's what
that's
it's
what
called.
That's what they call it.
Yeah, with Stephen Hawking, which that's like a weird visual image. Like.
Yeah, kind of. But I guess you only have moments of weightlessness. It's not like they're like the two of them are like floating around in a plane up there. It's not like
it's
that Simpsons episode where Homer goes to space and eats all the potato chips.
Right, right.
Sustained for something like 8 or 10 minutes.
Is it that long?
Yeah, I think it's. I mean, for that particular, I don't know what I'm talking.
Most
about.
Of which you spend barfing.
Yeah. Is it like Southwest where there's no assigned seating or you just line up, you know, for a while? Or?
I don't think there are seats at all. It should be just an open.
Padded,
you know,
room.
Open cabin, exactly. It's like a modified 727 airplane that they take
so
up.
It's easier to
so it is like when Homer goes to space.
Well, yeah, you're supposed to be able to fly around, I suppose. You know, they take out the beverages and you can drink the...
I didn't realize that the weightlessness lasted that long on the Vomit Comet.
But no, I'm sorry. On the Vomit Comet, it doesn't. You're right.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, you know, 15, 20 seconds, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Well, that's not that fun.
What do you think Stephen Hawking and Richard Garriott are going to talk about?
I'm not going there.
Come on. You think Stephen Hawking's going to bring his little voice translator up onto the spacecraft?
How is he going to communicate?
He's got Foxy nurses with him all the time.
That's right, he does.
He's going to anticipate
all
the
conversation. He's telling the truth, he does.
Yes.
It's funny because in the article, the spokesperson for Richard Garriott is someone from NCSoft.
Right. Because Richard Garriott works for NCSoft.
Right, so it's a total promo thing that he's doing, or some type of publicity stunt. But it is, it's a private corporation that does it, and I guess if we really wanted to, we could also take a ride in the Vomit Comet.
How much do you think that costs? Let's find out.
Probably less than actually going into, like, real space. Isn't that what, like, Lance Bass did?
I'm having a moment of love for the internet, because I just Googled Vomit Comet and cost.
What'd you find?
Well, that a tandem skydive should cost no more than $200. the company normally charges $3,500 per flight. That's lot less money than I would have
expected. That's amazing. Yeah, I would have thought.
Apparently this will be the fourth time Richard Garriott's done this. They won't be charging Stephen Hawking. He gets to go for free. He gets to barf for free.
Can you imagine Stephen Hawking barfing?
Oh, man.
That's a vision.
Is this a new low point?
This is a very special podcast.
All right, let's get back to our staple of, our topics. Game addiction, yes, our favorite topic. Another report, a new report. There seem to be game addiction reports every week, right? This new one says that 8.5% of kids are not just addicted to games, but are pathologically addicted to games. They can't help it.
And what does that mean? They're like selling their Ritalin on the black market for money to play these?
Right.
Well, it was a survey. A survey done with over 1,000 U.S. children, conducted by a research firm that concluded that 8.5% of 8 to 18-year-olds they were deemed pathologically or clinically addicted to playing video games. They can't stop. So what does that mean? That means 8.5% of people are screwed up.
You know what I'm actually thinking as I'm reading this is, can you imagine if your job was to conduct surveys of 1,100 little, like, you know, pathological video gamers? I don't want to kill myself. Like,
I don't think it's just
what
one person.
What a job.
Yeah, I guess it's... Like, spending the whole day watching some kid play video games.
Watching
think,
13 to 18-year-olds, right? You know,
And then asking them, do you want to stop now? And they go, no, I don't want to stop.
Get away!
They start screaming.
Well, the follow-up article to that, I guess, it's a separate article. It says that even though game addiction is on the rise, it, you know, don't worry, because if you have stable genes, quote-unquote stable genes, you won't have violent outbursts.
Well, that pretty much leaves everybody on this podcast out.
Right. And the study defines
medical
stable as non-hyper. So
yeah, that definitely leaves out everybody on this podcast. Forget it.
So if you have non-hyper genes, meaning if maybe you're not diagnosed with ADHD, then addictions to video games won't lead to violent outbursts. We're all safe. There is no segue to this other story, this next story, which talks about the game, the mechanics of, or what is it, the mechanics of game theory? The theory of game mechanics, that's what it is. Or the game mechanics of reality. So,
which is a really interesting, but I'll be, as I mentioned to you before, completely impenetrable article.
I
think it's interesting. If I
have idea what she, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh God!
Snap.
All right. Oh God!
Well, let's get the background story on this article.
He's advocating in this article. I mean, new game mechanics, like example of like what is being addressed here? I don't understand.
Right. Let's talk about the background. So this Tracy Fullerton, who is a game design theorist at USC, wrote an article or wrote a paper about inherent problems in today's game mechanics, fundamental game mechanics, and how we're unable to move away from these basically genres that have been, you know, dominant in game design. And in the paper, they talk about strategy games and shooters and role-playing games and how basically these are the only genres that do well. And the big revelation or the big conclusion is that game designers aren't going to take risks because designing new game mechanics is risky. So you're right. I mean, duh, I guess. I mean, there's really nothing more to say except, you know, duh.
I don't know. I feel like I see new game mechanics all the time, just not in, obviously, the, you know, big commercial hits. But that's like saying, you know, if filmmakers don't take chances, you know, because you saw the top 10 and you see Wild Hogs, you know, or, you know, Die Harder or whatever, and you think, oh wait, these are all sequels or, you know, non-risk-taking ventures. But no, there's tons of experimentation going on out there. I mean, am I way off base here? I see fresh stuff all the time. You know, at GDC, we saw all kinds of stuff coming from the, you know, independent games areas. Are we not seeing cooler games because there's not enough new gameplay mechanics coming? I don't know. I just don't know where she's coming from or where she's going with this thing.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah,
take that, Tracy Fullerton.
You're at USC. You're wrong. There are new game mechanics all the time. No, I think you're right. We can parallel to like Hollywood and how, you know, there are certain genres of movies that just do well and that studios just love to make. And, you know, we, in the game industry, I guess, we do have our, we're looking for our Charlie Kaufmans and our Mementos and, you know, innovative game. But, you know, they usually come from the indie game world.
Yeah.
And she does list some of that. She lists, Super Columbine Massacre RPG as, and 911 Survivor as a couple games that, you know, break the mold and, you know, try to take a different approach to game mechanics. But for the most part, we are stuck with strategy games, shooters, and role-playing games.
No, actually, I'm gonna contradict you, Norm. Actually, what she says about Super Columbine Massacre is that what the game tried to do, in fact, is hindered by the fact that it's using these, you know, the game mechanics that it used, like the fact that it couldn't break out of these, you know, out of one of the
I got the feeling that she was saying because Super Columbine Massacre was a shooter that took away from the message,
right?
You know, of
that was a big failure.
Has anybody seen that game?
Yeah,
I don't think it was a shooter. It's like a top down.
Yeah, it was
like a dungeon crawler kind of, like, yeah. But you know, I haven't actually been able to find a copy of the game, but there's a lot of conversation and chit-chat about, you know, about what the game really was. I mean, on the surface, if you don't know anything about it, it really seems like this crass, awful, you know, how would anybody ever think of making a game out of that? But in fact, that wasn't the point of the, you know, the developer's point was not at all to make like a fun game. Like apparently he was sort of trying to more make a statement on
I'm not
on
sure if
situation.
He was trying to make a statement. I think it's just, it's something that, oh, shall we say, young people do, where it seems like an outrageous thing to do, so they do it.
Yeah, I don't actually...
And then it's good to talk about it later. I don't think it should be stopped or censored. But, you know, to say, oh, I was trying to make a point about, you know, no, come on, you're just being tasteless.
That not according to what the stuff I was reading today. Like, I've done a little bit of research because I really wanted to see the game. And some of the stuff I was reading earlier, he claims, no, that's not the case. I was misunderstood.
But isn't that possible? He's saying all that after the fact.
No,
now that it's become
entirely
a controversy.
Possible. Who knows?
I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, he was being a troublemaker or anything like that. That's just my impression.
Well, back to the article at hand. The conclusion is that she says we must learn to express ourselves in the unique language of game mechanics in order to successfully meet the challenge of constructing quote unquote living game worlds. But I mean,
you see,
my argument would be, do we really need that? I mean.
I have no
Logan.
Idea what she's trying to say in that sentence. It's so abstract. We need new game mechanics to express ourselves. Well, I mean, great. Well, bring
you
it on.
You know what we should do? We should challenge Tracy Fullerton to like a Juve Bowl style knockdown dragout. Don't you
the
think?
Thing is, okay, one of the first things I did when I finished reading this article is I went to her site to look at her project, Night Journey. Because I wanted to see, you know, where she's trying to take us, you know, with these ideas. And unfortunately, you know, you can't play her game that she made. You can't get any feel for what she's getting at here. Like, here's a new game mechanic, you know? And it's
yeah, she's totally going down.
It doesn't appear to be anything different, than all the unbelievably cool stuff we see, at the independent game sites, like Manifesto, you know? Where all that activity is taking place.
Gary, you wrote your last column for PC Gamer on the Independent Games Festival. You seemed pretty taken by what you saw at GDC.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see that some of that stuff is getting picked up and getting wider distribution. I think we were on the Game Theory podcast earlier this week. We were talking to Aaron Greenberg from Xbox Live, and he was saying that Castle Crash is one of the games that I really liked at the IGF and which won a couple of awards, is going to find its way onto Xbox Live. Of course, this stuff is already readily available, you know, for PC owners all the time, because they don't, you know, that's you can just put it right out there without having to go through all that crazy console certification. But yeah, it's nice to know that this stuff is getting wider recognition. I mean, you know, I'm someone who kind of works in this business, and I write a column about PC gaming, but I was kind of ignorant of a lot of these games, and it was only because I went to the to GDC and went to the awards that my eyes were kind of open. So for your average gamer, it feels like anything that helps put those games in front of people can only be a good thing.
Yeah. See, this is so awesome. Like, we're hitting the one other thing that I hype about all the time in the office that Greg hates to hear me talk about, which is independent gaming. So it's really
Greg's
perfect.
Just a hater. He doesn't play games. All right. Well, we've had enough of Tracy Fullerton until her game actually comes out and
until she's ready to
and revolutionizes game mechanics. You know.
Until she's ready to meet me in the ring and get her comeuppance.
No, I don't. I'm not hating.
She will have
Tracy.
Her comeuppance.
Tracy, if you're out there, I'm not hating on you. I just, you know, I didn't walk away with anything concrete, you know, other than this sort of hazy. We need things to be better, more clear. We need new tools, mechanics. You know.
I think there's nothing wrong with the current mechanics. We haven't seen the perfect shooter yet, or the perfect strategy game, or the perfect role-playing game. There's still a lot of room for improvement with our current game mechanics.
But also, when we do need something, I think somebody's going to come up with it. When there's a reason, when we need a new game mechanic to express a new idea that nobody's tried before, well, you know, somebody's going to do it, but, you know, you don't create a hammer before you have a nail, you know, to use it on. That sounded
unless you have like right. Unless you have like, an enemy to use
and that's
on,
my
right?
Zen
like,
moment for April.
Good work, Lux.
Alright, on to another topic that we've covered many times. In-game advertising. NextGen has a story that says that by 2011, in-game advertising will reach will be a $1.94 billion business. It'll be a rise of almost 23% a year over the next 5 years.
Don't you think we'll just stop noticing it like we've stopped noticing it everywhere else?
You know what? Ooh, can I talk? Ooh.
Go ahead.
That's where it belongs, because didn't you just mention that it was in casual games?
No, I think, well, that's the last line of the article.
That's where it belongs. It works in casual games. You know, because in between moves or whatever, when you're thinking, you know, your eye can fall on this ad, no problem. You know what? In-game advertising is wonderful in casual games.
I think when someone just looks at just the headline for this article, when you say in-game advertising, the first thing someone thinks of is a Subway ad in Counter-Strike, right?
Yeah, you know.
Right. That's not what in-game advertising really is. I mean, Google bought out a company that does only in-game advertising. I don't think they're going to go in a Crysis or in a Spore and have advertising there. What they're looking for, is advertising Google-style in casual games, in Yahoo games, whatever. Because those are actually really popular, those websites, casual games.
And they're fun, and they create fun games, fun products that are free, and they're really creative.
Logan, would you still play Chuzzle if it was a skin with an ad?
Dude, you have no idea what Peggle has done to my life. All right, and I would play a Nabisco Peggle. I would play Denny's Peggle.
A what?
Could you play some inspirational music behind this? Like, what Peggle has Gary, done for
not,
my
have
life?
Have you not experienced Peggle? Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't even understand what the word is. What is it?
Peggle.
Oh,
Peggle, the magic of Peggle. You've got to
Peggle.
Play.
Yeah,
it's the newest PopCap game.
They introduced it to me last week, and I've been hooked ever since.
What is it exactly?
What do you think, Jeremy? What do you think?
It's utterly addicting. I mean, it's like people talk about WoW addiction, and they don't even know the half of it.
I got this IM from Jeremy
like last Friday. I'm just like sitting here plugging away, and I get this IM from Jeremy that's like, "You guys suck." Can't believe you told me about this game.
It's on Steam.
I'm looking at it now. It's like these swirly things.
It's pachinko.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, pachinko. What was it? Oh. We're going to have to sample that. Oh.
So what, there's like little balls falling down the screen and they bounce off the little pegs.
There's so much more.
And then you have to shoot the ball. I'm not going to, Logan, you explain it. I tried to explain this last week.
I'm
going to
download the deluxe
trial.
You're
saying it's just about a ball bouncing down the screen. That's like, saying, love is about, you really like somebody. No, there's so much more to it than that.
Gaz, it's on Steam. If you have your account, you can just get the whole game.
Oh, really? Right. Okay, yeah. I'll just do that.
You'll be sorry.
No, it's just like 30 seconds after I start playing, I look like one of those kids did in Trainspotting, I just like, oh.
Fishing through the toilet.
I think the most addictive one of these PopCap games that I ever played was Bookworm. So I actually need to get Bookworm Adventures while I'm here as well.
Oh, I still play Bookworm.
I love Bookworm.
Yeah, I've got it on my pocket PC, and that goes everywhere I do.
Alrighty. Well, we were talking about independent games just a little while ago, and there's a new independent game. I guess it's an open source game that was just released yesterday. It's a demo for it. It's called Beyond the Red Line, and it's based in the Battlestar Galactica universe. It's basically the Battlestar Galactica game that all Battlestar Galactica fans have been waiting for.
How many of those are there on this podcast?
At least one.
This is New School Battlestar Galactica?
New School, that's right, based on the new sci-fi.
Not like, beady, beady, beady.
No.
Wasn't that Buck Rogers?
Oh, it was, yeah, that's right. That's right.
But this game is based on the Free Space 2 engine, Free Space 2 being possibly one of the best space shooters ever. And it's like a 400 meg download, and I was playing it last night, and it's really fun. I mean, it still suffers from some dated game mechanics, oh no.
What kind of game is it? Like a Wing Commander type thing?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a total conversion of Free Space 2. And they have a couple missions out in their first release. And if you're a fan of the show, you should definitely check it out.
You get that? Because that sounds like the sort of thing that I would like.
It's linked in the Delicious Links.
It sounds like there'll be 100% more space combat in this game than in the third season of the show. From what I hear, the third season's been pretty bad. I skipped it.
I haven't seen
it yet.
But
let's get real here for a second. This is an unofficial thing, right? So it's only a matter of time before these guys get shut down.
Well, hopefully not, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, we've seen it. We saw it with Halo, Jim. We see it all the time where, you know, you go and you make a game for something that you don't have the rights to, and sooner or later someone's going to shut you down because aren't they doing, like, an official...
You know, I think
game of some kind?
I think networks are just on the cusp right now of beginning to realize, you know, how much fan-created...
content.
What's the word? Yeah, content, you know, helps them. Now, they have another issue, which is that if you don't aggressively protect your intellectual property, you are in danger of losing, you know, like your trademark. You know, so they may, you know, who knows what they might do. Maybe they can offer these guys some money and sell it commercially. Who knows?
Well, I think the smart thing to do is, you know, to send a cease and desist letter and then not act up on it, you know, not follow through.
Yeah, exactly. Because they know that this is promoting the show. They even know that the shared torrent files of the original first season of Battlestar Galactica, you know, really helped their second season.
They've been kind of ahead of the curve on that. I mean, I think they actually released some episodes online for free.
Yeah.
And they have the podcast that their director puts up every week. That's kind of cool.
So hopefully they will take that sort of enlightened view, you know,
but,
on this.
You know, even if you're not a fan of the show, I think it's still worth a download. It's a fun space shooter. It starts off a little slow, but it might get you interested in the show. You know, Cylons and humans and the search for Earth.
You know, Earth is just a fantasy.
This is a really deep podcast.
Craft is giving away this dance pad. You know, but I thought it was a dance pad. I'm not sure. What's the URL again? It's craftbrands.com.
/activegame/pad.aspx.
Yeah. And it looks like a free USB dance pad. So, of course, you know, okay, no, it is free, but you have to pay $6 for shipping and handling.
But
handling.
Still.
I never did get that. Handling.
But what?
Anyway.
What's the
but
catch?
Now I'm concerned because I'm looking at the USB connector and I'm thinking, wait. Because I'm looking at the image, and it looks like it may only be like the size of a mouse pad. You're dancing with your fingers. I'm like, what have I done? I mean, I would order 10 if they let you. It's only one per person, per address, mind you. So anyone here in the office who wants to order one, you're screwed.
I don't know. Those wrinkles in the pad look pretty life-size.
That's what I thought. So have I been had? I don't know.
So did you actually order it, Logs?
So I ordered it. They said 2 to 4 weeks. I will give you an update on the podcast, all of you.
But what games can you play with it?
Okay, well, it says, you know, for right now, they've got games online.
Manny's Madness.
Master, Soccer Striker. You know, Kristen, that was delivered with just a touch more attitude than we needed. you can play Rock in the Boat, Virtual Dojo. I mean, all the good stuff, right?
I'm actually reading, there's a copy of the manual for the gamepad here online, so I'm reading the manual real quick. So when it arrives, Logan, you need to never immerse any part of it into any fluid or liquid.
Oh!
So I guess, okay, that,
but
including mayonnaise, I would assume.
This is a USB, you know, it's got a USB connector standard, so you know, you can reprogram it, you know, in theory, to work with anything.
Adult supervision is recommended in using the gamepad.
How weird is this?
And it's recommended that you take 30-minute breaks, or breaks every 30 minutes.
Use the gamepad only in a clearer area away from furniture or other objects. Root the cord so it's not likely to be walked on or tripped over. So maybe it is. Maybe, yeah.
Okay,
use the gamepad
know.
Only while wearing socks or soft-soled shoes without harsh sharp heels.
Yes!
So, no platforms.
Yes. I mean, it's got to be, unless it was made for infants or something like that.
It's recommended that breaks be taken every 30 minutes during prolonged gamepad activity.
So I immediately after this podcast, I'm going home so I can order another one from my home computer.
Yes, don't forget to stop running around every 30 minutes to eat some processed cheese or something.
Exactly.
To recover your energy.
Hey, you know, I like I'm very happy with the Kraft brand.
This device is designed for use with Kraft's active games.
But you know
what? Is this part of that effort that seems to be going on right now where companies that are making heavily processed and fatty and salty foods are trying to, you know, feel like they're giving something back?
Have you seen that Subway ad?
Which one?
There's a Subway ad of this kid playing like a Pac-Man clone.
Oh, yes.
And then the avatar gets so fat because he's eating these, like, burgers and stuff that he can't fit through the gateway.
Yes.
And the kid, like, looks at him like, what? Is that me? And what are we teaching our kids?
Am I really that fat?
maybe he should eat at Subway.
Okay, so I'm playing this Peggle game right now, and aside from the fact I have an issue with the fact that my tutor and mentor through the game is a unicorn called Bjorn, which, you know...
Yeah, the rainbow.
That is a problem for me.
He's the first of many.
Is there a lot of skill involved in this? Because it seems like once you launch the ball, it's just kind of random, like what things it's going to bounce
off. That's what makes this game so cool.
When I was in college, I remember one of my instructors told me, you know what you're going to get out of this class? You're going to get pretty much exactly what you put into it. And that's what I feel is going on right here. You're just trying it, like, you know, off the cuff, and you're not really giving it your full attention. You put into Peggle, you will get out of Peggle what you put into it. That's what I'm telling you right now.
Okay, all right. The serious response, you're right, there's an immense amount of luck involved in the game, but there's just enough skill so that...
Are you kidding?
No, Logan. There's a ton of luck involved in that game.
There's a lot of luck.
The ball.
But
yeah, you do, but then once you've done that, it's completely out of your control.
I will say, you're going to finish...
Unless you've got like a Rain Man level grasping of, physics.
You're going to finish many, many games, like 90% on your last ball, and
yes.
Several times you're going to throw your arms up in the air and go, yes, I promise you. And you'll be playing for hours.
And there are things like you can, you know, if you... You know the basket that's moving along the bottom? You know, if you manage to have the ball in there, you get a free ball.
So there starts
to be a little bit of strategy involved.
You can start bouncing
the
ball against the outer walls, so you can get some of the orange pegs that are, like, you know, close to the wall. And you can time it just so that the likelihood is very good that when the ball lands at the bottom, it'll land in the basket and you get a free ball.
Ooh, green pegs activate magic powers.
Yes,
magic powers.
Gun.
And every mentor has a different magic power.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got super guide now.
You're not stuck with Bjorn, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't know how long I can stick with Bjorn.
Bjorn is only the beginning, my friend. Only the beginning.
Hey, PC Gamer, what's going on? This is Nitro Quick, and I have a question for y'all. I have a GeForce 7950 GTX. Also got a Core 2 Duo system. It's pretty sweet. And you know what? Screw that. Half-Life is better than Duke? What the hell are you smoking? What the hell? It's not even close. Look, one word. Strippers. That's it. End of discussion. You don't have anything else. Duke even had an adult movie theater. Half-Life didn't have that. All it had was some crappy little underground science lab. The only way Half-Life will ever even come close is if Alex takes off his shirt and starts dancing around a pole in episode 2.
Hey.
Otherwise, end of discussion. And on top of that, I've got an apple for you. It's called Shut the Hell Up, Damn. Logan rocks.
Whoa,
I'm out.
Whoa.
Sweet.
Okay, obviously he did not find the strip club in Half-Life 2.
Wait, the secret strip club.
Yeah. Maybe
don't
his
you,
new favorite
I'm
game.
With the science.
Hey, remember, you have to do two short knocks, one knock, two more short knocks. That's how you get in.
Oh.
I mean, by that logic, I think Second Life is his most favorite game. It's the best game ever.
Exactly.
I think Chuck is stripping in Second Life right now.
Hey, somebody's got to pay the rent around here.
Hello, PC Gamer. This question is about music and games. I'm just wondering if you think there's a place for games that use licensed music choreographed to gameplay. You see it a lot in movies and things where they use really good music to sort of accentuate a scene or something. Do you think that they could use that same idea in games to sort of make gameplay seem a little more intense or a little more dramatic? So far, all you see it is in like Tony Hawk games or things like that where they just license music that just sort of plays as a background track. It's never really worked as sort of a dramatic effect. So do you think there's a possibility for that in gameplay? Thank you very much.
Well, not only is there a possibility, it's already in games, I think is the answer.
I think he may be talking about triggered events, you know, like when there's a lot of, you know, like when there's a especially tense scene, the music swells up, you know.
Yeah, no, that's what happens.
Games that do that
yeah, exactly. Like shooters, when you reach a boss level and the boss appears, the music changes and it's more upbeat, but when you kill the boss, then it tones back to the normal background music.
But that's been done with licensed?
I mean, it's not licensed music, I guess that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. It is a difficult thing to do. You know,
you have to
create hundreds of loops, you know.
And it's a lot of programming that's involved. There's a little bit of AI that has to go into that. And when you're talking about choreographing music to game or to gameplay, it's different from when you're arranging a score to a movie, because with the game, it's completely open-ended. You never know when the scene, quote-unquote, is going to end. You could be stuck there, do you really want to listen to dramatic choral, the epic sounds, for half an hour when you're trying to beat a boss? Not really.
I remember LucasArts touting this kind of technology years and years ago with, I think they called it iMusic or something, where it was probably in the TIE Fighter game, where they would actually, in real time, orchestrate the Star Wars theme to whatever was going on in the game. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, LucasArts has been pioneers in sound.
But it wasn't really licensed music. I don't know how you do that with, a licensed song.
Well, what you'd have to do is get the tracks from the original song and then have them re-recorded and loops made, that can be triggered, depending on all kinds of criteria, how many, what kind of action is taking place on the screen.
Yeah.
And then tie that into the game code. It's difficult, but like I said, I think it's inevitable that we're going to see that happen more and more.
The new Rock Band game that was announced is maybe what this guy's looking for. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly licensed music.
Best game ever.
I'm very excited about Rock Band.
I think everybody is.
Hello, PC gamers. This is Roger from Austin, Texas. I'm interested in getting into PC gaming. However, I experienced a significant amount of finger pain when I use a conventional mouse for any extended period of time. Are you aware of any viable alternatives to the mouse, such as a touchpad, for example, in PC gaming? Any input is appreciated, no pun intended.
There are tons of alternatives out there to traditional mice. However, the mouse is the fastest and most responsive input device there is, so hopefully you're not, dead set on going into multiplayer and, blowing everybody away. But, there is, like you said, there's external trackpads, external, what do you call the little ball things? Trackballs?
Trackball.
Yeah.
Enough practice with anything, you can probably do pretty well at it. I mean, I used to be in a Quake clan with a guy who used a touchpad, amazingly. And he was one of the best players I knew.
I know a lot of people who actually use trackballs in shooters. You can adjust sensitivity, and I think the trackballs are out now. Just have, really high DPI, so they're really sensitive. And I actually knew someone, if you were in RTSs, who used a Wacom tablet for RTSs.
Whoa, nice.
And so you could draw the squares or, drag to select, items and stuff, and it worked.
Great.
I switched over to the Razer Copperhead mouse about, 5 months ago. And I love it. It's actually been really good on my hands. I used to get a lot of kind of pain when using the Microsoft mouse. And something about the contour of this one and the ease of the buttons is really nice. So you might try changing your mouse too.
Cool. There's two things I want to add. One, number one, congratulations for knowing that something was wrong. I know a lot of people, they just, but everybody uses mice. I should just ignore this pain. And then the next thing you know, something really, really bad is going on. That's why I have a big scar on my neck, because I didn't listen to cues that were saying something was going wrong, when I was at the gym working out. And, then next thing I know, they were yanking out a piece of my spine. So that was great that you're responding to the pain and you're thinking, okay, something has to change here. Cause if you push it, irreversible damage can occur. The second thing is you can also go to a store, buy alternatives to the mouse. And, most stores have, 2-week, 30-day return policy. Well, that's what it's for. If it's not working for you, you can return it. Give it a shot for a couple weeks. See if it really works for you. Try trackpads, trackballs, and let us know what works. And we'll tell everyone about it.
Yeah, so what have you guys been playing? Logan, anything other than Peggle?
Yeah, I've been playing Secrets of the Ark, the latest Broken Sword game, as well as I'm still on my mission through Stalker. And what a wonderful journey that has been.
Is that a long game?
If you don't take all the side quests, it's about 15 hours.
It's a long game to me.
It's a long game if you're no good at shooters.
Ouch.
Yeah, Kristen, what are you playing?
You know, I actually haven't had a chance to play much in the past week because we were on deadline until yesterday, really. So I'm still sort of spending some time in GameTap, the GameTap service, just sort of tootling through older arcade games.
I love GameTap.
I was playing Crazy Taxi this morning. So, you know, because it's great. You can sort of, like, pick that stuff up and play for 10 minutes and put it back down.
But don't you have to download
them? And go make a magazine.
So how long does it take to download and install and get playing Game Taxi?
They're really quick. So the older ones, it's, you know, a minute.
Wow.
Yeah. I was downloading, like, Prince of Persia, Sands of Time. That took, I don't know, 10 minutes. It's pretty fast.
I love Game Taxi.
Pretty cool. Jeremy, how about you?
Really, honestly, Peggle's been all I have played.
Yes!
I love it, though. I mean, I kid you guys. I really am glad you introduced me to it, because it's a lot of fun. I'm loving it. I'm a Peggle master. I was a Peggle master 2 days after you told me about it.
Welcome. Welcome to the club.
I'm about a quarter of the way through becoming a grandmaster.
Wow.
You're in that rarefied era of Peggle players.
It really, at that point, though, it requires a stupid amount of luck. So, I mean, it's a lot like, it's kind of the WoW leveling thing, where once they get you...
Well, it's that kind of thinking, Jeremy, that's kept you from being a Grandmaster.
No. This game... I think it's cool that they give you something to keep you busy, but at that point, it really is, you know, they know you're hooked, and they're just going to give you impossible games to play.
All right. And Gary?
Whoa, bloody Peggle now. I'm playing it right now. Listen. You can hear it in the background.
It's so soothing.
I'm having a good time with it. So, yeah, that... Ooh, free ball. So, yeah, that and... Oh, it's not the unicorn anymore. It's like a little chipmunk beaver dude. That's cool. Okay, so, yeah, this and Guitar Hero 2.
Jimmy Lightning, by the way. I know all their names.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know.
I discovered today that there's a bunch of kind of Guitar Hero... knockoffs for the PC called like Free Tar and stuff like this, and I haven't tried it yet, but I'm gonna give it a try.
I have one here called Frets on Fire that I haven't tried.
Yeah, that's the other one. There's Frets on Fire and there's one called Free Tar Hero.
But those are with the keyboard, and you're just tapping on the keyboard.
Right, but now that there's a USB Guitar Hero guitar out,
it's only a
Vista. Vista will recognize it, and so you know, maybe you can actually finally get the true Guitar Hero experience at
really?
Home on your PC.
Because those open source games, they actually use real licensed music, don't they?
Yes,
well,
and that's obviously
a bit
dodgy.
Yeah.
But
welcome.
Gary, if you get that to work, will you let me know? I didn't buy Guitar Hero for my 360 because I have it from my PlayStation, so I couldn't really justify it.
I know that somebody that I was talking to plugged their USB guitar that they got with Guitar Hero 2 for 360, plugged it into their PC, and Vista recognized it without a problem. So that's
But I wonder
good.
If it just recognized it as a 360 controller. Is that what
Well,
it
what 360 controllers, when you plug it into Vista, they're all recognized as sound devices.
In Vista, okay.
In Vista,
right.
Yeah.
So it may or may not work, but certainly, and even if it doesn't work right away, now that guitar is out, I'm sure somebody will do some kind of patch or something that'll enable that to work.
Yeah.
So yeah, Command & Conquer 3, which I finally got in the mail earlier this week. And I'm loving that, because it's kind of like a throwback to, you know, the great, you know, CNC games of old. I actually kind of like the fact that they didn't really innovate very much with it. They just kind of, you know, went back to what they knew. And for people like me that love the old CNC games, it's kind of like a very kind of pleasing journey back through time, but with better graphics.
There's a really cool, just went up today, there's a new PC Gamer video podcast that has tons of really great interviews with a bunch of the guys that worked on CNC 3. So if you're into the game, I recommend it. It's great.
Yeah, I'm in Act 3 of the GDI campaign right now, and I guess I'll go back and do the others after that. And then I'm going to be looking for some people to play online with, but I just suck at these games now. I'm just not as good as I used to be. When I played Company of Heroes against Dan, he just wiped the floor with me.
Dan's in love with RTSs.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of an RTS hardcore guy.
Yeah,
so who's playing it in the PC Gamer office who isn't, like, super elite that I could actually play and have a game with?
Probably me. I'm playing CNC 3, actually, too. It's got my box copy, so I've been playing
a
lot of
that. Me, because I don't play strategy games. We
can argue a 3v1 against
I'm
Dan.
Competent.
I can't even win the tutorial missions in those games, so
you
could beat me.
I'm just terrible at strat games.
If you guys get a game going, then drop me an IM or whatever.
It'll be the world's most pathetic
and play.
And the best part about CNC3 is that we can record it and then, you know, go back, watch the playback, and make annotations in the game on what we did wrong.
And then post it to YouTube.
That's right, or post it on the CNC official message boards or official site to share. All right, well, that just about does it for us this week on the PC Gamer Podcast. Join us next week for another explosive episode. Maybe not as deep. But,
is that what this episode
started,
was, explosive?
It'll be more explosive. You can
now
send us
with
questions.
More explosion.
That's right. You can send us email us mp3 question at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or check out our website, www.pcgamerpodcast.com, or subscribe to the magazine at pcgamer.com/subscribe. And so that's it for us this week. And this
hey,
is
Gary, wait till you get to Lord Cinderbottom, man. He's going to blow you away.
We're all going to be playing Peggle.
Happy Peggle.
Boom, boom, boom.
Okay, this is like the 14th blanket Chuck has bought in the last week.
Another one? Oh my god.
What is it that you do at home?
Rolls around in blankets.
Can't you get them dry cleaned? Or who else is laughing besides Kristen? Who do I need to address? What a hostile environment. You know what? I'll bet the laughing person is the one who didn't flush the damn toilet.
Okay, come on, let's go.
Hey, Jeremy, can we cut my last comment, too? That just sounded retarded.
Yes, I was planning to cut the whole show up till now, anyway.
Yeah.
Oh. Who's going to be an Art Rock band?
I thought we decided that yesterday.
Oh, did we? It was.
I'm guessing not Dan, unless
you asked me to be in your band.
Play the drums
or
the mouse and
yeah, keyboard. Okay, Kristen, you're playing, you're doing vocals, right?
Wait a minute.
No,
you're lead guitar.
Why wasn't Aria part of this discussion, Dan?
You know what? We didn't actually have anybody on vocals.
Yeah, Logan.
So, Logan? I mean,
yeah, what's up with that?
One of your singer?
Oh, don't put the Asian in the rock band. What is that? Come on, there's James
we,
E.
We already have one.
All right. I'll rip on the vocals. I'm sorry.
Excellent, I can't wait.
Sorry about the race card, but, you know, I had to.
Well, there's something crazy.
Could
there's something crazy.
Excessive.
There's something crazy going on in the office next door. There's, like, cops and everybody's outside.
What?
Whoa, okay, ooh, let's investigate. Okay. All right, we're signing off.
See ya, thanks, Jeremy.
See ya, bye.
Bye-bye.